Theophilus, President Wood, President O'Neill, Regents, colleagues, distinguished guests. The human condition, research. Are there really any neat formulae to measure these? Are there any neat answers? Time and again, I'm convinced that there are not. I spent 15 minutes today between 1 o'clock and 1:15 opening my mail for yesterday and today. I had set aside four pieces of the mail that I hadn't planned to bring to your attention. From Professor Jean-Paul Biot, Dean Kine, this is the program of the coming concert tour. We will be giving it here on campus Thursday, January 29th. It's being taken to southwestern Alaska. In western Alaska, this concert tour was made possible through a grant awarded by the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Dr. Gordon, I received in the mail also today a letter from two of our former graduates, or two of our graduates, Bill Brown and his wife, down on St. Paul Island. And Bill says in part, "Enclosed is a Russian note we found in a bottle while beachcombing. Would you mind giving it to the language department, have them translate it, etc.?" I might suggest, as Professor Parr works on this, that he might want to look into establishing contacts with our former students down on St. Paul Island. And it might be that some of the marine people would be interested in the drift pattern of the bottle. I don't know, but it's well worth researching. I'll turn it over to you after this meeting. Also, Professor Gordon, as you know, we've been discussing the secondary school language coordination program dealing with foreign language articulation. One of my fellow deans, Herman Wheel, a distinguished psychologist of national recognition, University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee, says, "Dear Dean Kime, as I promised you in my letter of December 2nd, 1969, I am sending you herewith the minutes of the meeting of the Foreign Language Articulation Committee held on December 10th, 1969. My office was represented by two assistants," and then he goes on, "we've been discussing this, particularly the foreign language articulation problems. And as your department continues to research this, I would hope that you might want to again reestablish contact with Professor Wheel, who, by the way, is one of the few escapees or survivors of Buchenwald." Professor Krejci, head of the philosophy department, and I'll introduce them all in a moment. I have here one more of Professor Sam Wright's journals, published on a gelatin plate up at Wild Lake, north of the Arctic Circle. And as you'll recall, Professor Krejci, we have recommended him for a Guggenheim Fellowship as he does his work on the Journal of Human Ecology. I'm very interested in a portion that I could only block read before I came here at 1:30. "More science and technology will not get us out of the present ecological crisis until we find a new theology or rethink our old one. No set of basic values has yet been accepted in our society to displace these those medieval ones with which we live until we replace the Judeo-Christian axiom that nature has no reason for existence save to serve man. We shall reap the rewards of extinction as has every self-centered organism and culture before us. We must re-explore our nature and destiny. Only a relevant theology of nature can meet the ecological crisis of our time." So I think we might want to send Professor Wright some more ditto sheets to help him out, help him to produce this in his 10 by 12 cabin that he's spending his second year up at Wild Lake on, particularly at this critical time in our development of the Arctic. I would like to introduce the department heads for the College of Arts and Letters who are here. One is not yet back from the Modern Languages Association National Conference, and another is wavering between moving his art department over to the Fine Arts Complex or succumbing to a second bout of flu. First of all, Professor Lee Salisbury, head of the Department of Speech, Drama, and Radio. And just ahead of him there, Professor Bruce Gordon, the head of the Department of Linguistics and Foreign Languages. Then over to my right, Professor Miko, the head of the Department of Music. And seated next to him, Professor Jerry Reinwand, the head of the Department of Journalism. Professor Krejci, the head of the Department of Philosophy. He was in here a short time ago. I think that he'll be back. Almost 7 years ago, when I made what I would call a lateral move from professor of English and journalism full-time to dean of the College of Arts and Letters, one of my first tasks was to update the college's section of the catalog so the publication could go to the printer. One of the prerogatives of my new position, I learned, was to change the wording of the blurb that introduces the general and specific programs of the College of Arts and Letters. Here is what we wrote. The humanities diversify the quest for knowledge in an era of specialization. Examining what men have thought and expressed, they keep knowledge current, expanding, and general. Technique distinguishes them from subjects primarily using the empirical method of science, for there are truths which transcend verification. The study of languages breaks cultural fetters. Directed reading builds appreciation. Exposure to the fine arts quickens sensibility, and all language, literature, and the arts collaborate to make knowledge prevail and discovery imminent. This statement has stood exposed, but unaltered, for almost 7 years, despite repeated reviews by our faculty as they have carried out introspective studies, resulting in at least a dozen reports and realignments of our basic programs, right down to the PAR report, about which you will hear at a later time. The seven department heads and I deeply appreciated the opportunity about a year ago to review with the regents what our teaching responsibilities are and how we are carrying them out. And believe me, we appreciate the opportunity today to give you a brief review of what the faculty of the College of Arts and Letters is doing in research, how they are doing it, and how it relates to the state's needs. And at the start, every faculty member performs research every day to be more knowledgeable and effective in and out of the classroom, and he doesn't get a grant to do it. Some insight into how the Arts and Letters faculty view their responsibilities at the very start of the seventh decade of the 20th century is essential. Comforting, too, is the sure knowledge that others outside the Arts and Letters fields are wondering, reassessing, too. All quickly recognize that technological man is the subject of many books that are au courant here and worldwide, no question. As we look at the ample evidence of history that civilizations which have relied chiefly upon technology have grown, waned, and died, we're heartened by the quite recent warning by the president of the American Association for the Advancement of Science that we must apply the space technology to Earth if we are to survive. Educators, lawmakers across the nation recognize that there must be a balance of sorts between the sciences and the arts and the humanities. All of us are far more gratified than you might be aware that such feelings exist here in this American university. The Congress, reflecting the national concerns and trends, has established the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Arts, which we hope will a little more quickly become a sort of a counterpart to the National Science Foundation, all of which have need to exist. Of course, there's still a terrible imbalance, the humanities, the fine arts up here, and science down here, and we don't expect an immediate equilibrium. But we do hope for some hints that equilibrium will be approached one of these days. Many leading educators and political leaders across the world openly say that they would like to see an infusion of philosophers into the world to tell us who we really are, where we are, and where we should be going. As the university complies with my request that I be allowed to return to the classroom and teaching outside the classroom full time, where the real excitement and challenge truly exists today, I am in retrospect that I have been in the fortunate but at times perplexing position of helping to research and set national policy on these matters which deal with teaching and research. As some of the speakers pointed out to you this morning, they are involved at the national level. I served between 1966 and 1968 on the 15-member National Commission on Arts and Sciences. Just last November, I resigned from the 9-member Board of Directors of the Council of Colleges of Arts and Sciences, pending my return to the classroom. But I took along one of our professors so that we won't lose this contact as I go back to the full teaching position. I've retained my position on the Board of Directors of the Pacific Northwest Conference in Higher Education simply because I feel that at an appropriate time I should be able again to turn over these contacts to some of our other faculty, and I sent one of our professors down to represent me at the board meeting just about 2.5 months ago. I'm glad the department heads and the faculty of this college are similarly involved at the national, regional, and state level. And if you don't think helping to set your research and set national policy and recommendations on national policy doesn't require research and time, I would be happy to recommend that some of you volunteer for the position. It's challenging, but it's time-consuming, and it's highly rewarding for all of us. As our 7 departments pointed out to you last year in our report on teaching, the College of Arts and Letters in the past, historical past, largely performed a service function for the rest of the university, simply because this is what was needed to be done first. This does not mean that the faculty have not been doing research and writing over the years. The publication you just received offers a partial report on their work, which to a great extent has emerged while largely teaching full-time. But research, creative production can stifle somewhat if it always must emerge from the cauldron of adversity. We have no alternative today. As we have pointed up in our portion of the pounds of reports the university has directed your way, we increasingly must move from a service role to stronger majors and graduate programs, and the research that must be a carefully measured part of it. I am aware that you've read the many reports we have sent your way during my 16-year residence at this institution, and the department heads and faculty and I are grateful. One concrete proof that you share our concerns, that we are communicating, is that in 1968 you shifted the administrative structure to meet the demands of the changing times, and among other alterations established the position of Vice President for Academic Affairs and the position for Vice President for Research. Increasingly, the College of Arts and Letters will be going to the Vice President for Research for assistance in the research this state of Alaska demands, a state where change is not just confined to the university, but where change is all-permeating, change as rapid as the swift transition from Alaska summer to winter, and is profound. Fortunately, internationally and nationally and here in Alaska, there is growing agreement that as we go full circle again and again in new endeavors, ultimately we hew to Aristotle's precept, man is the measure. Again, the humanities diversify the quest for knowledge in an era of specialization. Examining what men have thought and expressed, they keep knowledge current, expanding, and general. Technique distinguishes them from subjects primarily using the empirical method of science, for there are truths which transcend verification. The faculty of the College of Arts and Letters now feel that we must insert a statement that reflects the need for more emphasis on research, an emphasis that reflects accurately our present involvements and those we must engage in the future. And we are buoyed by the knowledge that this young institution has exhibited a wisdom beyond its years, a wisdom perhaps gained from watching the turmoil of its elders in the land-grant system, who have not recognized the need to retain the basic administrative homogeneity of function, who have let slip too far the primary responsibility for the instructional programs from the instructional departments and colleges. What specifically, Kime, is the college doing in research now? Speech, drama, and radio under Professor Lee Salisbury. COPAN, College Orientation Program for Alaska Natives. The forerunner of everything else that has emerged and will continue to emerge dealing with our native people. And when the history of this institution and of this state, or at this time in our state, is written, covering the last decade, one of the prominent names in that history will be Professor Lee Salisbury, who, despite a full teaching load, despite the tremendous task of going from here to there to get parts and pieces and people to turn on award-winning theatrical productions, remained concerned about a highly important 25 segment of our Alaska population, the Alaska Native. Speech pathology, 60% plus of our native population has hearing defects. And that department, with the high support of the president and others, has enabled us to establish a very small but effective and, I think, highly important speech pathology program here. And we will have a speech pathology laboratory in the new fine arts complex. Educational radio and television, and I can only touch the highlights on some of the research that these people are doing. These were explained to you earlier by Professor Salisbury dealing with the university portion and Professor Northrup dealing with the statewide portion. And I wish to emphasize here that the entire university will be in on these programs. We have communicated the information about the programs university-wide and beyond, and we don't consider them solely ours. The Department of Linguistics and Foreign Languages under Professor Bruce Gordon. Research in Alaska Native Languages, 7 years of NSF-supported research. Already now for publication by a distinguished linguist, Professor Michael Krause, and working very closely with him in exciting new bilingual studies, Irene Reed. Professor Krause has stated that she is the leading authority on Alaska Eskimo on the North American continent. And this is the only publication I'm going to draw to your attention today. But in my opinion, in the opinion of the president who has encouraged them to bring this out, the opinion of Professor Gordon, who saw to it that it was published, this is the Rosetta Stone, Alaska, the key to the condition of our Alaska Eskimo people, who have not had an alphabet in the past, who have not had vocabularies neatly put down on paper in the particular areas that are being studied here. The Rosetta Stone, and when they know how to communicate, when it's put down on paper finally, and they can share this segment of their culture with us, even as they use it to bridge with our culture, this strikes off the fetters that have been around these people since far before the period of American purchase of Alaska. Small, but extremely significant. And then, of course, three language institutes to devise and teach better ways to teach, and that takes research. Art under Professor Helmut Van Flein, research into an immediate utilization of the Alaska media for art. The clays, the woods, the marble, the soapstones. Two boys walked into my office 2 summers ago and they said, "Are you Dean Keim?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Well, we just wanted you to know that after Professor Van Flein started doing that research in soapstone in collaboration with the Department of Geology, my dad can't keep up with the demand. It's going full time now and he can't get out enough soapstone." Just a little side comment. Healy Clay, again working with the Department of Geology. They convinced us, along with Professor Van Flein, that this was an outstanding clay comparable to some of the clay that's imported into the rest of the United States from Europe. And you talk to Bill Waugaman and Joe Usabelli, another graduate from this university, and he'll tell you that the demand for clay now is reaching out from Healy clear down to Kodiak Island and beyond, and other parts of Alaska. The preservation of native crafts and media. One of our professors from the Department of Art, at half of his own expense during Christmas, went up to Point Hope to capture on film and in notes the disappearing art of Baleen basket weaving. But we have to move on. Music under Professor Duane Miko. Ethnomusicological research and publication. The researching of legends, myths, and putting them in new music and in dramatic form and presenting them in different parts of Alaska. Talk to the people down around Haines to see the impact that Professor Greta Brown, her presentation or creative production on the Raven had down in that neck of the woods. English under Professor James R. Wilson, an institute in English designed to acquaint high school English teachers with the latest teaching materials and methods, work in applied linguistics, oral structure, and studies of English, techniques of teaching composition and literature, research into native legends and lore. One of our students in this respect had her book on Alaska legends accepted by McCabe, by Whitman Publishers, who have written to her that it looks like it, and it's coming off the press right now, will become their third classic. And when they talk about their third classic, they're talking right along with Pecos Bill, a classic of many years standing. Number three, emerging from the Department of English and Journalism. And of course, a highly creative, dedicated student. Research into better ways to teach English here and throughout Alaska. And if you look at our course offerings in basic English, you'll see that we recognize there's a far greater need for more research in the basic means of communication, the English language here. We're doing some exciting work there. Journalism under Professor Jerry Reinwan. This department is doing constant research to assist Alaskan newspapers to move from the archaic linotype composition, hot metal printing, to the cold type press. Research into how we can teach students here and farm them out to the media in Alaska. Four students are doing this on Alaskan newspapers right today. Extremely exciting research into radio photo facsimile of newspapers. One of our professors has put in for a sabbatical, which will include in part continued study in Japan this time, where they have facsimile printers even on the fishing boats. And our professor envisions sending newspapers into every village by FM radio. In the meantime, however, more down to earth, he's serving as controller of the important Tundra Times and helping to research better ways to improve communication and the status of our wonderful native peoples, which warms those portions of my Iroquois journalistic heart. Philosophy under Professor Rudolph Krejci. His department is conducting an ordered research program into how it can best tell us where we are in this seventh decade of the 20th century. One of his faculties is on sabbatical in Europe right now, building a better international bridge to this understanding. And traveling over this bridge came his one-year replacement from our desperate friend Czechoslovakia. And this spring, the president of the International Philosophical Association, distinguished Professor Gabriel of Vienna, former rector of the University of Vienna, will come over this same bridge to be the opening speaker at the Festival of Arts, sponsored annually by the College of Arts and Letters in cooperation with others, to keep the arts and letters alive and relevant both in the departments, the college, the university, state, nation, and internationally too. The theme of the festival, centered on the opening of the Library Fine Arts Complex, will be the arts coming of age in the North. An international symposium will follow Professor Gabriel's presentation, with representatives from several of the more North Pacific countries attending, and most probably including those from the Soviet Union. Is there a plan for research for the College of Arts and Letters? Indeed, there is, born out of constant study. It never will be neatly fettered for all to see. Creativity, research into creativity, must be unfettered. It must soar, it must permeate, it must elevate man's condition and spirit ahead of the winds of change, and with the winds of change, indeed must help to create the winds of change, but never let them pass it by. Sub specie aeternitatis, from the point of view of eternity. The College of Arts and Letters, in order to fulfill its role in the educational process, must preserve the goal of the past human enterprise, thus transcending the shortness of contemporary yardsticks. Ah, but back to Earthkind, does it generate bucks too? Over the years, a few examples in rough figures to answer this question. Almost a quarter of $1 million from Carnegie for professors to help research the direction we must go and teach to. Over a quarter of $1 million for the foreign language institutes. 70K for the English Institute. More than 89K for COPAN. Over 200K from the Higher Education Act in our planning for and involvement in educational radio and television. 20K from the State Department of Education for similar research and planning. over 5K from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, just starting. 25K just this week from Rockefeller for this same general area. 10K from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Grotto Foundation for a research film on the American Indian. About 10K from the Alaska State Council for the Arts to help enrich the festival and research the best ways to take music and drama to the bush. Several K for art and philosophy libraries and collections from the Rabinowitz Foundation. Over $127,000 for research into the native languages, a portion of it in fine cooperation with ISEGR and arts and letters staff doing the teaching and research. Our five-year plan for the college includes a more determined effort this new year to establish the highly interdisciplinary Boreal Center for Cultural Studies, which some of us began formulating more than a decade ago. The need is great. The opportunity is here. The record will show that we're moving again after being shot down after a long period of study following our open recognition that we had to devise a program for seeking research funds without forcing faculty who were teaching full-time to take on double burdens or treble burdens. Just this week, as I was completing this presentation, I encountered an article published by one of our professors in the January 1970 National Press Photographer magazine, just off the press. His opening two paragraphs will serve as the closing two paragraphs of this presentation. Quote, there is an interesting relationship between the campus and the, quote, real world, unquote, as I find out every day. People look to the universities to do research and to give people a better preparation for life. Yet those of us involved in teaching are constantly looking out into that real world to help make the teaching more relevant and more worthwhile, unquote. Thank you.
We indicated that the format would include questions at this time. Chuck, in the interest of time, we're running short, and questions have been asked of the other after the other
institutes. I
just assume move on and have the presentation. That's
yes, I would hate to hamper my other colleagues' presentations, Mr. Chairman.
Dean, what? Thank you, Dean. Time. Dean Wendell Wolf, the College of Education. Wendell.
Thank you, Dr. Theophilus. Ladies and gentlemen, the College of Behavioral Sciences and Education is composed of six departments: anthropology, home economics, psychology, sociology, which is a combined department, health, physical education and recreation, military science, and education. Now, research which is directly related to instruction is, of course, carried on in all of these departments. However, major research projects are carried on principally by two departments in the college, anthropology and education. So very briefly, I'll give you some idea of what's going on in those two departments. Current research projects in anthropology center around the classification of artifacts, general archaeological laboratory research, and the summer field work experiences. Presently, the Otto Geist collection is being cataloged, and of course the cultural anthropologists continually gather additional data pertaining to residents of the state, particularly the Alaska Native. Future projects are expected to include a survey and assessment work along the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System and in the Chena River Flood Control Project area. And of course, additional compilation of additional information about the state's indigenous population. They are concerned, of course, about the protection of archaeological sites in keeping with the Antiquities Act. The Department of Anthropology has a responsibility for publishing the anthropological papers of the University of Alaska. This publication is presently edited by Dr. John B. Cook, who holds a joint appointment with the Department of Anthropology and the Institute of Arctic Biology. I did not bring copies of the anthropological papers to distribute, but those of you who might have an interest in them can certainly obtain them from me. Now, in education, current research programs being carried out are related to the analysis of teacher effectiveness in the state's rural schools. Much of this is being done, of course, under the sum of money that was provided initially for the Alaska Roots School Project, something over $500,000 provided by the Ford Foundation. Specific projects include a study of personal and professional characteristics that are predictive of attrition of Alaska rural teachers, research on teacher attrition and its relation to teacher quality in the village schools, and then the effectiveness of the use of the Alaska readers you've heard about in selected rural schools is now being studied in a demonstration research project in cooperation with the Northwest Regional Educational Laboratory centered with headquarters at Portland, Oregon. Research projects being designed for which research grants are now being negotiated include educational effectiveness of bilingual education in the village schools in a demonstration project in cooperation with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, effectiveness of teacher aid programs and the teacher corps approach to providing teachers for Alaska rural schools in cooperation with the U.S. Office of Education and the Division of State Operated Schools in our Department of State Department of Education, an analysis and evaluation of educational data pertaining to Alaska rural schools, and consideration is being given to the establishment of a data bank for educational organizations and agencies within the state. Several other research programs are expected to materialize through an anticipated Center for the Development of Cross-Cultural Education. And Mr. Frank Darnell, who is head of the Department of Education, serves on that commission. And the plans for the center come somewhat as an outgrowth of the work of that commission and as an outgrowth of the expansion of the Alaska Rural School Project. So prospects for the funding of this center are now being considered. Last year, it was felt that the Department of Education had reached a stage of professional competence that it was capable of providing research and development expertise to various educational agencies within the state. So to fulfill this function, the department established an Education Research and Development Center. Basic purposes of the center are to facilitate educational research by developing proposals and serving as the contracting agent for educational research projects, to conduct educational research projects which are of interest to the school districts within the state of Alaska and of interest to the university, to serve as a liaison agency to assist local school districts in developing and conducting research projects, and to encourage the publication of educational research findings. Now, as far as the behavioral sciences in general are concerned, there's much to be done in the area of behavioral science research. For example, many aspects of alcohol-related problems are in need of further study, but extremely limited funds and staff shortages have thus far precluded any substantial behavioral science research projects by faculty members in our Department of Psychology and Sociology. So very briefly, this gives you some idea of what's going on in the College of Behavioral Sciences and Education research-wise.
Thank you, Wendell. We have coffee waiting. I'd like to have one more presentation if you could hold out, speaking out to the Regents, about another 20-25 minutes. Dean Bryna Kessel of College of Biological Sciences and Renewable Research. Bryna.
The Academic College of the Biological Sciences and Renewable Resources is responsible, of course, for providing instruction in all of the fields of the life sciences, both the basic and the applied, composed of three departments: the Department of Biological Sciences, which is essentially the basic department, the Department of Land Resources and Agricultural Sciences, and the Department of Wildlife Management. Working closely with us is another administrative unit, which you'll hear a little bit more about later, the Alaska Cooperative Wildlife Research Unit. As Dr. Theophilus pointed out, the primary role of the academic colleges is instruction of students, education, learning involving the students. Research, however, plays a very major role in any quality instructional program, and I'd like to emphasize that this is important at the undergraduate level as well as at the graduate level. The primary objective of research in our college, then, is in support of the instructional program. both undergraduate and graduate. Subject matter-wise, our research programs in the college are not as readily delineated as they are in some of the specifically set up research institutes. The college faculty are selected for the relatively broad scope of teaching disciplines that are necessary, particularly at the undergraduate level, with the specific research interests of the faculty being a secondary factor. We attempt to hire a mix, that is, people that are qualified in both the teaching and the research aspects, but as I say, from a discipline viewpoint, we choose more from the teaching viewpoint than we do from the research viewpoint. Over the years in our college, however, at least since the early 1950s, within otherwise broad discipline areas, we have, through our hiring, developed a very ecologically oriented faculty. When we choose microbiologists or physiologists or botanists, we try to choose those, when we have a chance anyway, that are interested not just in the organisms and the organisms per se, but in their processes and how these interrelate with the various environmental factors, particularly as we meet them here in Alaska. The extremes in the of Alaska's natural environment, the seasonal changes and fluctuations and so on, the responses of organisms, the mechanisms of these responses, have seemed to be a very natural area of emphasis for any biologist at the University of Alaska. And it is in this area where we have developed our expertise and where most of our graduate programs lie at the present time. We were laughed at a little bit during the last decade when the bandwagon was one of molecular biology, and everybody wondered why we were still looking at the environment around us and ecology. I am pleased to announce that in the present decade, it looks like the bandwagon has moved in under us, and ecology is the in thing at the moment, with society finally waking up to the importance of man learning to coexist with his environment. In fact, it got so bad last summer that ecology became a nasty word as far as the northern tundra was concerned. I'd like to just name a few of the specific research projects that are currently underway within our college, just to give you some idea of the breadth of our projects. Dr. Benita Neeland, our plant ecologist, working with one of our graduate students, Jerry Hoke, has a project on the effects of tracked vehicles on tundra vegetation. Jerry Hoke worked last summer up on the PET 4 Reserve, dating and examining old trails. Rather than seeing what they're doing today, he dated these old trails, took pictures of them, described them, and is analyzing the various types, the number of times they've gone across the various slopes that have been affected, and is coming up with some very, very valuable information. Dr. Lent, Peter Lent, who is an assistant professor of wildlife management and is also assistant leader of the Cooperative Wildlife Research Unit, he and several graduate students are working on the social behavior and the ecology of the muskoxen. And I think you're all aware of some of the questions that have been bandied about on the muskoxen within recent months. Dr. Ronald Smith, who's our physiologist, is working on the physiological and the behavioral adaptations of the blackfish to environmental extremes. This is the critter, if you recall, is the one that theoretically can be frozen and come to life afterwards. Well, we do know it has very high tolerances to low oxygen, essentially no oxygen, and also to very low temperatures. And he is working on the behavioral and the physiological adaptations of this creature. Dr. Maribel Allen, our professor of microbiology, working in conjunction with the Institute of Marine Sciences, is working on metabolic activities of phytoplankton associated with Arctic sea ice. Dr. Van Heining, again, will be working with the Institute of Marine Science on the development under the Sea Grant proposal of a fisheries resources development in Prince William Sound. Dr. Sykes, the head of our Department of Land Resources and Agricultural Science, is working very hard on the development of a cooperative research watershed, Poker Creek, Caribou Creek watershed up the Steese Highway here, for a study of hydrologic and ecological relationships of the water budget of an Arctic watershed, information that is not available. This is just a small sampling. I wanted to show you some of the extent of the research projects that's going on within the college. Further characterizing our research, the kind of research we have in the college, I'd like to point out that our research is very highly individualistic rather than the team research that you're apt to see somewhat more in the institutes. This is, again, I think, partly due to the diversified areas of competence of the faculty. We don't have more than one plant ecologist. We don't have more than one animal physiologist, and so on. Another reason for the diversity of our projects is that we have a tendency in the college, working with our graduate students, to let them choose, within reasonable limits, the research project that they wish to work on. Rather than just attaching them to a ongoing research project, we try and give them some choice. Makes us work a little harder sometimes to try and get funds and to get them supported, but this is the way we have been functioning, at least to date. Because of this individualistic type of research, we find that our sources of funding are relatively small and diversified. I was chuckled this morning when Dr. Mather was speaking, because most of our projects would come under what he might refer to as tidbit funding. This is true for several reasons. The funding of our projects, we handle those that are appropriate, or many of them, through the various research institutes, some of them through the Cooperative Wildlife Research Unit, and some of them directly through the colleges. I'm pretty proud of the amount and the type of research that we've been carrying on in the college over the years. You have that list of publications that's just been handed to you. Our publications for the last 4 years are listed on pages 20 to 31, remembering Dr. Mather's comment that publication is the actual end result of research, that this is one of the best ways of sampling the productivity of a given unit. One of the things that I am particularly proud of is the success that we have had with the students in publishing. I don't know what kind of a national average there is, but I'll bet we're way above it. The percentage of theses that we have published, you'll notice, I forget what page it's on, but it's towards the end of those pages, that we have 10 publications that have been put out by students during the last 3 years, at scientific publications. This research productivity has been accomplished with, perhaps I better step back to a different point of view. You remember that Dr. Mather was very firm speaking this morning that there were certain advantages in funding that the institutes enjoyed and that they needed more of in order to be able to get viable ongoing research programs. Within the academic colleges, we have had very few of these advantages, particularly these financial advantages that have been enjoyed by the institutes. We'd be considered to be better off if we had the advantage of some professional help and grantsmanship, had the availability of matching funds for research, travel monies for seeking research funding, summer salaries for seed money, and some of these things that we do not have in the colleges, which they do have in the institutes. Also, for many years, I have been attempting to get some state funds to use for research fellowships, and we have been totally unsuccessful to date. I've been griping, I hate to say so, but for a full decade, about the poor environment for research within the academic facilities of this university. I went back to our last presentation to the Regents in 62, and here I was saying almost the same thing then. Obviously, I'm not being very effective. But one of the really high points over the years in our efforts to develop a quality graduate and research program has been our association with the Alaska Cooperative Wildlife Research Unit. This unit is a separate administrative unit, but the programs of this unit are so intimately coordinated with those of our academic college that we work together essentially as one. Our offices are in juxtaposition, we use the same laboratories, we have an almost complete amalgamation of the faculty and the students. A great deal of the credit for the smooth functioning of this coordinated program goes to Dr. David R. Klein, who is the leader of the Cooperative Wildlife Research Unit and a professor of wildlife management. And I'd like to hand the stage over to Dr. Klein and let him tell you a little bit about the Alaska Cooperative Wildlife Research Unit, and then I'll come back with a few more points after that.
Go right ahead, Dave.
You wouldn't slip me in the middle.
Thank you, Bryna. Ladies and gentlemen, the Cooperative Wildlife Research Unit program is a nationwide program that was established by an act of Congress back in 1935. And the Alaska unit was established here at the University of Alaska in 1950. And there are 18 similar units located throughout the United States at land-grant universities. The establishing and administrating agencies, or agency, involved is the Bureau of Sports, Fisheries, and Wildlife within the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. In addition, to this agency, there are three other founding agencies. This includes the university in the particular state, the land-grant university, the State Conservation or Fish and Game Department, and the Wildlife Management Institute. The Wildlife Management Institute is a private conservation foundation. The units are established through a cooperative agreement between the three agencies which provide most of the financial support: the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Land Grant University, and the State Fish and Game Department. In establishment of the units, a coordinating committee is provided for with representation of these three agencies, and this coordinating committee directs the activities of the unit. Now, the purposes of the Cooperative Wildlife Unit program are really twofold. They're graduate training in wildlife management and ecology and research in these same areas, both basic and applied. Now, within the program concept, these two purposes are inseparable and of equal importance. We do have secondary functions which relate to serving the public, such as conservation education, providing technical advice or assistance to state and federal agencies. The financing of the Alaska unit runs to approximately $120,000 a year. About 47% of this is through direct federal support through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. About 20% comes from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, 18% from the university, and 15% through grants and contracts. And this is about equally divided through between federal sources and non-government sources. Now, the federal support through the Fish and Wildlife Service provides for two full-time professional staff members, myself and Dr. Peter Lant, who is the assistant unit leader. In 1968, we received an increased federal appropriation, which allowed us to hire the second full-time staff member. Both of us have appointments, as Dr. Kessel pointed out, within the Department of Wildlife Management, and we have full faculty status. The federal money additionally supports some of our own expenses, travel, operation of vehicles, etc., and about $9,000 for research support. The university money is provided for the operation of the facility itself, secretarial help, offices, and office expenses, and in addition, summer salary for Dr. Dean, who is head of the Department of Wildlife Management. During the summertime, he becomes a full-time staff member of the Wildlife Research Unit. There's also money available for a limited student support. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game provides money entirely for student stipends and support of graduate student research. I'd like to emphasize again, as Dr. Kessel has already, the organizational relationship of the Wildlife Research Unit within the university structure. We're very much a part of the Department of Wildlife Management and the College of Biological Sciences and Renewable Resources. The staff of our unit are involved in teaching within the college, and the college staff are involved in unit research and activities. either directly, as in the case of Dr. Dean, or indirectly through collaborators on various research projects. As part of the college, we share the academic advantages which are associated with this type of location. But at the same time, we maintain our administrative autonomy, which provides us with the freedom to secure grants and other financial support, which other university institutes have. And it also provides us the freedom to pursue research in a similar manner to the other institutes on campus. Our program provides for support at the present time for 10 graduate students. 9 of these are working toward their Master of Science degree, and 1 is working toward a PhD. These are working for their degrees, however, within the Department of Wildlife Management. We're also supporting, offering partial support for 1 postdoctoral researcher who is doing research into ptarmigan nutrition. This is a cooperative venture with the Institute of Arctic Biology. The unit staff provides administration for research for the graduate student research programs, and we also provide a major share of the graduate student advisement within the Department of Wildlife Management. Our program here at the University of Alaska is well known both nationally and internationally, and there is keen interest in particularly in the Scandinavian countries in our program, and we've had in the past few years several students from the Northern European countries, including Finland, Norway, Sweden, and Germany. These students have brought a large share of their financial support with them, and in some cases they have obtained it after they were here through the American Scandinavian Foundation or the Fulbright program. The majority of our students, however, come from the United States and to a lesser extent Canada. The focus of our research program is from the applied to the basic, or perhaps more appropriately, from the basic to the applied. It often is of a shorter term nature than research within the other institutes, largely to fit in with our Master of Science program in wildlife management. The staff research, however, is generally of a longer term nature. Now, in order to give you an idea of the scope of the research that we're involved in, I have a few slides which I'd like to run through rather quickly. This is the bald eagle. In Southeast Alaska, we've been doing work with the bald eagle, and specifically the effect of logging on the nesting success or nesting ecology of the bald eagle. This work is supported to a large extent by the U.S. Forest Service, which is particularly interested in their activities and the influence of their logging activities on the eagle. We've done similar work to determine the effect of logging on blue grouse in southeastern Alaska. This is an aerial view adjacent over an area adjacent to the proposed Trans-Alaska pipeline route. Recently, we've been asked by the Secretary of the Interior to do an assessment of the impact, the potential impact of the pipeline and the North Slope oil development on fish and wildlife resources. And we started this work last summer, and we'll be carrying it on for some time. One area of our research deals with assessment of the utilization of wildlife by native people. We're interested in both in the impact that the use of the wildlife by native people has on wildlife populations, but also the dependency of the native people on wildlife for their subsistence economy. These are reindeer on a reindeer range here in Alaska. My own research orientation is directed toward assessing the factors which influence the quality of the summer and winter forage of both reindeer and caribou here in Alaska. This work is being funded by the Bureau of Land Management, which is the agency which leases grazing areas for reindeer in Alaska, and is also the agency responsible for management of most of the caribou habitat in Alaska. Now, these are some of our students working on this particular project of assessment of quality of vegetation on reindeer range. Another project, a graduate student project, started fairly recently. It deals with the determination of the importance of mineral licks in wild mountain sheep population, within a wild mountain sheep population. And you can see over here, this wet area is a natural seepage, locally known as a mineral lick. And we're trying to determine the importance of these licks in the life cycle of the sheep, what effect this may have on their growth, physiology, their annual cycle of nutrition, how it may affect their behavior and use of the various components of the annual range. A study recently completed focused on the relationship of the young or newborn sea lion pup to the female and the development of the bond and the strength of the bond between the young and the female. A study of behavior on the rookeries and of particular importance in relationship to management of this marine mammal, because present harvest techniques are involved with taking pups during the time that during the time of the breeding season when the female and young are together on the rookeries. And we're trying to assess the disturbance, the importance of the disturbance of harvest on survival of the pups. Now, Dr. Kessel mentioned that the assistant unit leader, Dr. Lent, was working on muskox behavior and range ecology. This is a picture taken at Nunavak Island during the transplanting operation in which muskox were captured and transplanted to the Arctic Wildlife Range. Dr. Lent is working in both areas, trying to determine the relationship of these muskox to their range, the importance of snow conditions, and other factors relating to their survival. You'll hear more about the muskox tomorrow from a different point of view, from the muskox as a domestic animal. Our work is oriented toward the muskox as a wild animal, as an element of the native fauna of Alaska. This isn't from one of our research projects. It happens to be one of our teaching activities. Each year in the past few years, we've sponsored a field trip, which is a course, a one-credit course in wildlife management, a graduate course, to the Kenai National Moose Range. And a number of students are escorted to the range, and we observe different types of management, game management techniques here hiked up into a mountain sheep habitat to spend a few days. Can we have the lights, please? Well, very briefly then, I can say that our focus in the future will be quite similar to that of the past. We expect some expansion of our program within the present framework because of the recent addition of another full-time staff member. We can expand somewhat in terms of the number of students that we can support and adequately advise. We have tentative commitments from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game of increased support, financial support, to cover the additional students which we hope to be able to handle. We hope for proportionate support from the university as we have received in the past. However, our unit is somewhat unique in comparison to other institutes. We don't anticipate a federal cutback in the future, and we do anticipate comparable financing to what we've had in the past. We're really not hitting hard for increased university support. We just hope to maintain the comparative support that we've had in the past. In the future, we plan to continue to emphasize broad ecological training within our program. We try to produce ecologists rather than just game managers or technicians. We are proud that our students have demonstrated an environmental consciousness. This has made them concerned citizens when they've gone out into society, and they've been strongly motivated toward concepts of wise resource management and also towards concepts of maintaining the quality of the natural environment. With the emphasis on environmental quality that has developed within the nation and here in Alaska, perhaps in Alaska more specifically since the oil lease sale last fall, but with this increased emphasis on environmental quality, we feel that the Alaska unit will continue to play an increasing part in developing philosophy of resource management and development here in Alaska. I think I can stop here if people are ready for coffee or questions.